Hi, I'm Connie Loizos.
And this is Alex Gove.
And this is Strictly VC Download.
Hey there, everybody. Hope you are doing well. It's been another relatively quiet week in tech, but we here at Strictly VC will not rest in providing you with the latest and greatest news from Silicon Valley and beyond. To wit, Connie has a great interview with Chiowa Chen and Eric Kim, co-founders and the two general partners at Goodwater Capital, a 9-year-old Burlingame, California-based venture firm that is now managing $3.3 billion in assets. Goodwater focuses exclusively on consumer technology startups that it thinks have the potential to become utilities. Notably, they have a global mandate with 60% of their deals located outside of North America. Some of their past bets include Musical.ly, a lip-syncing video app that is now part of TikTok, Toss, a South Korean finance super app, and Monzo, an app-based challenger bank with headquarters in Britain. Stay tuned as Connie and the folks at Goodwater talk about Goodwater's masterclasses, the role of AI in consumer tech, and more. But first, the news. This week, Twitter switched its logo to a rather spare X, and yesterday, both the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times wrote about Elon Musk's reported plan to turn X into a so-called everything app, combining social media, messaging, payments, and perhaps more. Notably, both publications think turning Twitter into a super app is far from a slam dunk. Musk undoubtedly envisions his new X app occupying the same space that Tencent's WeChat holds in Asia. However, both the Journal and the Times point out that WeChat benefited from excellent timing, launching just as China was going digital, primarily via the smartphone. Because WeChat was the only game in town, Chinese consumers became used to doing everything inside one app. By contrast, U.S. consumers have long relied on single-purpose websites and apps. Also, both the Journal and the Times believe U.S. regulations could significantly slow down Musk's efforts to add payments and other financial functions to his app. The Journal learned that Twitter has acquired licenses in 4 states to operate as a money transmitter, but that leaves many more states to go. And the Times speculated that antitrust issues could slow X down, unlike WeChat, which has been actively promoted by the Chinese government. And finally, both publications point to the miserable track record of other apps that attempted to take on payments and other types of functionality. These include Facebook, Uber, and Snapchat. While I agree with everything said, I think both of these articles miss an important point. Twitter slash X has a long way to go to restore the trust it lost through Musk's tumultuous acquisition of the company. According to Matthew Prince at Cloudflare, Twitter's web traffic is tanking, and Threads represents a significant threat if Meta can persuade even a small portion of its Facebook and Instagram audience to use it on a semi-regular basis. While Musk may have succeeded in cutting expenses at Twitter, he has also scared away brand advertisers and users through radically denigrating the platform's content moderation capabilities. Through rebranding Twitter and raising the possibility of relaunching it as a super app, Musk has definitely changed the subject, but Twitter slash X's weak foundation could make it difficult for Musk to roll out the new set of services he imagines. Up next, Connie's interview with Goodwater Capital. But first, a word from our sponsor. Affinity is changing the way VCs manage relationships and increasing deal flow. By aggregating the data exhaust produced by daily interactions and communications, and analyzing it with machine learning, Affinity delivers up-to-the-minute insights into professional relationships, unlocking new introductions to key decision-makers, and giving you a holistic view of your team's networks in a centralized, automatically updated database without any manual upkeep. Affinity works with over 1,600 investment firms across venture capital, investment banking, private equity, and consulting, where sales are more personal, collaborative, and driven by relationships. Affinity, opening doors to help you close deals faster. Learn more at affinity.co. That's affinity.co. Check it out today.
Congratulations, $1 billion across two new funds. That's right.
Yep.
And so then that brings your total assets under management to $3.3 billion, which is incredible. This is a 10-year-old firm, or is it 9 years
old? Nine years old, July of 2014.
Wow. And are you breaking out how much money is in the early versus growth stage fund?
It's roughly a 60-40 split, Connie, across early versus growth. So early about 60%, growth about 40%.
And so you were raising this presumably this year, or did you close the fund and you're just now talking about it?
Yeah, we just closed in Q2 of this year. So it's all pretty fresh in terms of the fundraise. We did a first close in Q4 of 2022, but then wrapped up the fundraise just this past quarter.
So I think with anyone else, raising a consumer-focused fund or funds would be pretty difficult in this environment. What was the process like? What were some of the questions that LPs were asking? Because consumers change so much and most of the industry has run in the opposite direction.
Yeah, that's a really good point. As the rest of the industry is potentially turning its focus away from consumer tech, we are unrelenting in our focus on consumer tech. And it really is this message, I think, that resonated with LPs, this level of focus, right? In this market environment, everybody is talking about focus, focus, focus. We're telling all the startups that we work with that they have to focus and they have to execute just a handful of things well. And this is how we focus, by being the best consumer tech investing platform in the world, finding the very best consumer tech startups at early and growth stage everywhere throughout the world, and providing them with capital in a period of time when, like you said, it's not necessarily easy to raise money for a consumer tech company right now.
And Connie, just add, I remember when you helped cover us back, I want to say 2017 or 2018, when Snap first came out, and we did this long report about Snapchat just to help the broader industry and world understand what Snapchat was or is at the time. And since then, we've been a little bit under the radar, frankly. We've just been heads down building the firm. We've now raised our fifth early stage fund and our third growth fund at this point. And I think part of the motivation to talk about the fundraise at this point is we do have a contrarian view around the power of consumer tech, that this is here to stay. And some of the most impactful companies are consumer tech companies, but they look a little bit different when they start out, whether it's renting one of your extra rooms through Airbnb to a total stranger, or getting a stranger's car through Uber, or joining some of these video-based platforms like a TikTok or a Musical.ly. These look a little bit different to the average person or even the average investor out there. But Goodwater itself, we've dedicated the firm over the past near 10 years to building out really a platform. And today, the platform sits with close to 80 core companies across our early stage and growth stage funds across 19 countries. And if you look more broadly at our seed portfolio, that's over 600 companies. So it's the largest dedicated consumer tech seed portfolio, and that spans nearly 50 countries. So Chihua, myself, and the broader partnership and the team at large, we've really just been heads down the past few years to build out this platform. But we're excited to talk to you today a little bit about our conviction in consumer tech and why it's even tripled over the past few years as we've been building out the platform here.
Did I hear correctly? You said you have 600 seed checks that have gone out?
Yes, over 600.
Wow. So how? That's a lot. That's quite a lot of checks. How has your team done that? What's the process for a founder to secure a seed?
Yeah, Chihua, you want to talk about the platform that we've built around this?
Yeah. So one of the keys to our strategy, Connie, is that we have a platform team, dozens of engineers, data scientists, product leaders, ML experts that are building a customized set of services that empowers seed stage through growth stage consumer tech companies to learn best practices and implement them. So you can actually see information on this online. We'll send the link through to you afterwards. It's a program called Goodwater Genesis that is the best seed stage consumer tech ecosystem anywhere in the world. And what we do is we bring these companies on with a small amount of capital, But then we provide them with access to a curriculum, a set of classes, benchmarking services, concierge services that enable them to learn from the best companies in the world and implement those best practices into their businesses at the earliest stage.
I'm guessing some of this curriculum is in modules online that they can access.
That's right.
And how do you decide who gets a check and who doesn't?
At the seed stage, it's very broad. As Eric mentioned, it's over 600 companies, 50 countries around the world. In these seven target categories that we are focused on investing in: housing, healthcare, food, financial services, transportation, education, and entertainment. Those are the seven categories of human flourishing. And we have a threshold of minimum user count, minimum revenue, small, tens of thousands of users or tens of thousands of dollars of initial revenue for post-launch companies that gain them admission into the Genesis program.
There's an application process online under the Genesis header of goodwatercap.com. And what we're really looking for, as Chihua mentioned, is not only entrepreneurs that are covering these big industries like fintech, edtech, health tech, but really participants that really want to be part of this consumer tech ecosystem. Because there's a lot of shared knowledge and shared best practices across the entrepreneurs. Every single consumer tech entrepreneur, they leave a digital footprint. They are out there to get the traction of consumers itself. Mm-hmm. So they're all acquiring users, they're engaging them, they're retaining them, and they're monetizing. So you can imagine when you have this focus on this industry and every single entrepreneur in your portfolio, what we're not doing is clean tech. We don't do enterprise SaaS. We don't do security. We don't do hardware. These are all digitally native companies that are trying to acquire users, engage them, retain them, and monetize them. And so that leads to a lot of cross-pollination. It's one of the benefits, I think, of being a truly global firm. And this is, Connie, something we've also really doubled down on, really being dedicated to the global approach. We think there are so many synergies by cross-border pollination across companies. A company like Toss in South Korea, one of our companies that have broken out to be a multi-billion dollar player, can work with Monzo in the UK, can work with Stash in New York, can also work with Zendit in Indonesia, or Momo in Vietnam. These are all Goodwater portfolio companies, and they're all helping one another understand best practices around acquiring users, engaging them, retaining them, and monetizing them. And so what we're looking also from the seed stage all the way through the growth stage are people who are really active participants that want to be part of this community, and they're going to be accretive to one another by joining it.
I am wondering, what is the fatality rate of the companies that you've funded, the 600 seed stage companies?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a lot of it's TBD, and I don't have the exact numbers, Connie, sorry, but they mirror broadly what you might see in the broader venture marketplace. Mm-hmm. I think what's going to be really interesting to see is this most recent set of cohorts. And so we do know that the seed markets are going to be a little bit challenged in this broader macro environment that we're in. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of seed companies that were born in the 2021, 2022 vintages. I don't know where it will shake up, but just given the fact that there's less funding out there, there's likelihood to be more companies that need to pivot or to potentially close down and try something new. From a Goodwater perspective, we are looking at this as a broad family of companies. There's often entrepreneurs that come out and they start something new as well. We want them to be part of this ecosystem, sure, and this family overall. But to the practical reality that you're pointing out, there is this cycle we're going to be going through. The reality is that a lot of seed companies will face challenges on the funding side.
Do you know roughly how many you've continued to fund beyond the earliest stages?
I believe the number is six, Connie. Okay. I'm not exactly sure, but at least six of the companies that were part of the seed portfolio received Series A investment from Goodwater.
Yeah. And a lot of these companies are pretty recent for us. I'd say over half of the portfolio have come online in the past 18 months.
Wow.
So we're still certainly ramping up at monitoring the companies, trying to be as helpful as possible and seeing where we can pick our spots. Look, the reality is our early and growth stage funds are not that broad. This set of funds, we will make maybe 30 to 35 net new investments. And so it's a very concentrated portfolio of the very best consumer tech opportunities, we still think we can provide a lot of value across the ecosystem, but that graduation rate just by the pure numbers is going to be pretty low. But we're really excited because a lot of these consumer tech opportunities coming from the seed portfolios are truly unique, and then they're able to graduate into this more concentrated program. Our Series A checks are 5 to 15. Our growth checks, when we get to scale, can be $30 to $50 million over time as well. In some cases, we've gone even bigger than that too.
Can you tell me maybe of one of those six startups and what was so interesting to you about it?
A recent example would be a company like Origin. This is a ML-powered travel agency that was actually started by one of the research leads at Stitch Fix. And the company applied through the Genesis funnel, actually came to the website, goodwatercap.com, filled out the Genesis link. As they went through the Genesis application process, we noticed that they had actually grown very quickly without a lot of capital, had managed to get to a multi-million dollar bookings run rate. And so we reached out to them directly, started working with them towards a Series A, and then recently led a $6.75 million Series A investment into the company.
And if we look back to the start of the firm, back when we started in 2014, we've had a version of Genesis or a seed program since the beginning of the firm. So for Fund One, for example, one of those representative examples was a company called Stash or Stash Invest out of New York. So doing an early seed check and then being able to help that company and grow with that company over time into an early stage and then a growth stage investment as well. And similarly, out of Fund Two, a company called Everly Health or Everly Well in the health tech sector, helping them as a seed investment. Initially, I think our first check was, I don't know, 25 or 50K or so, and then being able to help lead their Series A and then help with their growth rounds over time as well. So this was not necessarily a net new experiment for us. We had proof points and saw the fruits of being able to get in early with companies, be helpful to them, even as not part of our core portfolio. And then as they've scaled up through early and growth stages, being able to provide additional help and then also certainly additional capital too.
And just for founders who might be interested, is there a cutoff? You mentioned cohorts. I don't know, Eric, if you were just talking about 2020, 2021, different vintage years, but are there classes or is it like an asynchronous thing? You apply, you get in whenever you get the firm's attention and you start your online education?
It's funny. My favorite term these days, because I think we're doing it on our healthcare insurance side, is open enrollment. So we are open enrollment from a seed and from a Genesis program side. So the link is live. It's a platform approach. It's continuous in terms of the content. Every month, we are launching these masterclasses. I think Chihuahua last year viewed over, was it 5,000 times?
5,000 times, yeah. To give you a sense of the breadth of the portfolio, Connie, there's over 1,200 portfolio company founders and executives that have used the services or attended a masterclass. The masterclasses have been watched over 5,000 times. You can attend them live and ask questions of the instructors, or you can attend them asynchronously after the fact and watch them. It's really an incredible phenomena to have companies at the seed stage, the early stage, and the growth stage across the entire portfolio attending classes taught by Sean Rad, who is the founder and CEO of Tinder, John McNeil, who is the president of Tesla, Jeff Wilkie, who is the CEO of Amazon Worldwide Consumer. Mm-hmm. And these are true masters at their craft, right? That built some of the most important consumer tech platform companies of the last decade or couple decades. And they have given their time and their knowledge to teach this next generation of entrepreneurs the best practices around how to scale a successful business.
Are they also LPs in Goodwater?
Yes, many of them are. Not every instructor is, but many of them are.
Are there new firms that are focused also on consumer? What are you seeing in terms of firms that are interested in these same deals?
Yeah, we haven't heard of new funds being formed on a consumer-only thesis, certainly not in the last couple of years. But we do think that most of the large firms will continue investing in consumer tech, probably to the tune of 20 or 30% of their overall funds. And so if you think about this new $1 billion of fresh capital focused on consumer tech, that's akin to a major Sandhill firm with a $3 or $5 billion fund dedicating 20 or 30% to consumer tech.
And we're quite global in our approach as well, Connie. I think a lot of firms tend to be maybe Silicon Valley or North America focused or maybe Western Europe focused. We are very global. We don't do China specifically, but outside of China, we're very active in North America, Western Europe, Southeast Asia, East Asia. And what's interesting there is that the venture ecosystems are quite strong in terms of appetite for breakthrough franchise leading consumer tech companies, because they all are seeing this massive wave of adoption in these local geos, whether it's fintech or edtech or health tech. They're looking for that PayPal, you know, type dominant player mm-hmm. in a specific geo that has a lot of equity accretion value. We view our role as a Silicon Valley based firm that is global in our approach is to help bridge and to cross-pollinate best practices and certainly bring a lot of best practices from Silicon Valley. We're also learning, though, from other geos as well. But that's where we find a lot of kinship with firms like Forerunner. And also, there's also a lot of global seed great firms as well in geos that are looking for those franchise type winning potential companies. They're not necessarily consumer focused, though, because maybe the breadth isn't enough in one geo to just be consumer tech. But we love to partner with firms across the board because we think that our focus and these platform like capabilities, while they're not open source, they're very creative to be part of the cap table alongside a lot of these great firms too.
What percentage of your portfolio companies are in the US versus outside of it?
The latest split was around 40% North America and then 60% outside of North America.
And when you are talking about building a global portfolio, as you've been doing, how do you handle conflicts of interest? I mean, all of your companies are strong, they're in different geographies, but they have global ambitions. So would you fund very similar companies in different geographies, thinking that the market's big enough where they are, considering India is huge? Southeast Asia is huge. How do you think about things like that?
That's a really, really good question, Connie. I think in the early days of the firm, in the first 4 or 5 years, there was the concern among the entrepreneurs that there would be competition. But I remember this one incredible lunch downstairs here around the corner in Burlingame, where the CEOs of 4 or 5 of the largest consumer fintech companies in our portfolio all sat down together. And it was Monzo and Toss and Stash and Momo, companies that presumably could eventually be competing. But once those CEOs got together and started sharing best practices, it was like magic. They were helping each other think through their product strategy. They were sharing things that they had learned around organic or referral growth. They were talking about how the markets might differ. And so they had to cater their products and their services and potentially even their business models differently. And that's really a culture that we've built here at Goodwater. If you were to sit in on any of our masterclasses, you might get 80, 100, 150 people from around the portfolio attending a class, some of whom might have competitive overlap, but are actually helping each other learn. Because at the end of the day, in those categories we talked about, housing, healthcare, food, financial services, transportation, education, entertainment. The real competition is the bad customer experiences that the offline incumbents deliver. There's trillions of dollars of revenue being captured by offline incumbents who have for decades now gotten away with delivering really poor customer experiences, that our company's building digital consumer utilities. That's at the end of the day what every single one of the Goodwater portfolio companies does. They build digital consumer utilities that are custom designed to deliver an amazing consumer experience. And that's the real competition.
And I'm trying to think, in theory, we would certainly, in a specific geo, in a specific subsector or feature set, want to clear those conflicts for major positions. And certainly if we're on the board, I think we have a fiduciary to make sure that we are serving companies in the right way. I'm trying to think back. I don't think it's happened.
You mentioned that you don't invest in China anymore, but you did previously.
Certainly in our previous investing careers, we did. Our Fund 1 investment included Musical.ly, but that was primarily because of their U.S. audience. So as Goodwater, we have not invested in China actively. Since 2014, we didn't believe, frankly, we had the right to win there. So we didn't have a true edge in that geography. And so as part of our thesis, we've always been not part of the China ecosystem.
So you invested in Musical.ly, which ByteDance decided to shut down and combine with TikTok years ago. So you now have a stake in TikTok or ByteDance?
We don't have a stake anymore. The acquisition happened. We sold our shares at that time.
Got it. Can you comment on what your take is on sentiment in the US about investing in China. It seems like such a shame that we've come to this point where it's impossible on both sides to do anything.
Yeah, I think there was also recently a Wall Street Journal article even about some of the investment firms and there being some issues with that from a US perspective.
Sequoia Capital, I mean?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I think from our global perspective, all of these entrepreneurs around the world are really trying to promote, and I'm not just trying to pour out Kool-Aid here. They really are dedicated to human flourishing. So I don't frankly care if you're in Seoul or Shanghai or in Hanoi or in other parts of the world. They're truly dedicated to some version of trying to make human life better. Not everyone, obviously, there are good versus bad actors, but there is a lot of benefit for people to understand when an entrepreneur is trying to really improve the lives of others and how they're doing it. And so China, for example, for us, while we don't invest in it, we study what those companies are doing in terms of entrepreneurship, in terms of their work ethic, in terms of their ingenuity and creativity, their innovations on the consumer tech side. Some of the most interesting innovations came out of Tencent, Alibaba, and that whole ecosystem around that. And so we're a student of it. We're learning constantly. Again, we're not investors in China, but it would be a shame, to your point, around losing that connectivity to some extent and the ability to learn from one another. And so I don't know what the future holds. We're not China experts, but I do hope that there continues to be great cross-border learnings from one another.
Another area that was slow to attract investment was Turkey. And I remember when Michael Moritz led that early stage investment in Getir, the grocery delivery company. I don't know if he beat you to that deal or you were there first, the grocery delivery company.
Yeah, he invested the round before us and then we invested with him in the Series B.
I think the grocery delivery business is so interesting. It's so capital intensive, obviously. Can you talk a little bit about what you see happening there? I mean, there's been a lot of consolidation. Getir bought Gorilla. I saw that it was in talks to buy a German rival, Flink. I don't know. Did it close that deal?
I believe so. Yeah.
Has it ever been profitable?
The company doesn't disclose its financials publicly, but I can tell you that its core business is very, very healthy from a unit economic perspective. That's part of what we really liked about the business when we first invested in the Series B. They have managed to identify a combination of high AOV products, high average order value products, and extremely efficient operations by using the dark store model. And I think that's what's enabled them to become the global winner and to roll up Gorillas and Flink. They're effectively the winner now across the Middle East and Europe because the competitors have either shut down or have been merged into Getir.
You didn't mention specifically the Middle East. Is that an area that you're investing in more? That's obviously very nascent. I just last year, the year before, started seeing deals in Pakistan, for example.
Yeah, we would consider that one of the emerging geos that we're paying attention to. The core geos for Goodwater are really North America, Europe, North Asia, and Southeast Asia. Those four geographies are where 80 to 90% of our capital will go in this fund cycle. And then emerging geographies like Latin America, like the Middle East, like India, those are areas where we definitely will spend time, but probably ultimately 10 to at most 20% of the total $1 billion in this fund cycle will go into those emerging geos.
And what about social media? You mentioned Snap, but I can't remember. I don't think you invested in Snap. Is that right? You've just done that report on Snap.
That's right. Yeah.
What do you think of all the social media companies that we see trying to compete now with X, as Twitter sadly is suddenly called?
Yeah. So we've had quite a long history investing in social media companies. Between Eric and I, including our previous investments at Maverick, Excel, and Kleiner, we invested in Facebook, Kakao, Twitter, Musical.ly, TikTok here at Goodwater. And we think that there continue to be opportunities in social media. Social media is one of these interesting categories where every generation's kids want their own social media product. And so there's the Facebook generation, then there's the Instagram generation, then there's the Snapchat generation, now the TikTok generation. And we think new opportunities will emerge. So it's an area that we're continually paying attention to. We haven't made any new investments recently in social media, but there will be another product for the next generation. We can almost be certain of that. And so it'll be interesting to see what its value proposition is If you think about Facebook, it was feed-based, largely web. Instagram was the mobilization and visualization of social media, right? Really a mobile-first product. Snapchat was the idea that all of your older brothers and sisters, all of their lives were documented for all of history on Facebook and Instagram, and you don't want that, so you want disappearing photos. And then musically, TikTok was this short looping music-based content that was really what we found super interesting at the round that we did when it was only maybe 200,000, 300,000 active users here in North America at the time. And we think there will be another emergent opportunity as well.
I'm still amazed that Snapchat isn't valued at more just based on the usage I see from my teenage sons and their friends. Everyone uses Snapchat. Nobody uses any other means of communication. It's pretty fascinating to me. Any thoughts about how Elon Musk is running his company and or your thoughts about the future of /X? I mean, a lot of people like to think it's the end of times, but it's also hard to imagine everyone moving to another network.
The network effects around that content are extraordinarily strong because ultimately someone who has something interesting to say wants to go to the forum where the most people will hear it and interact with it. I think what I've personally been impressed with is what he's demonstrated during this period of time to entrepreneurs and leaders and CEOs everywhere around efficiency. And you heard Mark Zuckerberg say this with Meta. You've heard Google now pick up this refrain. But I think really what Elon did at Twitter was the start of it and really demonstrating that these companies can and should be run really, really efficiently and can innovate fast. These smaller teams can actually innovate much faster. And you're essentially turning companies like that, that got big, maybe overhired during the pandemic, into efficient innovation machines again.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that they've rebranded to X. I've frankly been more of a fan of the tweeting bird. I just thought that was super curious and interesting and will be sad to see it go. But I think, again, I don't have any information that other folks do. But if I remember back to part of the motivation to acquiring Twitter was the idea to build a super app. And that really was like, oh, interesting as us as global investors, because we do see in other geos this phenomena of a super app, often in some of the Asian countries, in South Korea, for example, Toss is a super app. And so what is interesting potentially, and again, just total conjecture here, is that by going to this brand of X, then it can start to expand some of its offerings outside of the news feed itself. So can you get into payment? Can you get into commerce? Can you get into gaming, into these other things that I believe Elon has been on the record of trying to, a part of the motivation to have a platform with lots of users. But then the idea is, can you cross-sell and cross-engage and then therefore increase the retention and the engagement and monetization ultimately of the users that are on the system? So it would be really interesting to see if this rebranding around X is actually part of the broader play to go into some of these ancillary verticals. There's not a lot of platforms that have that many users, and can they get into some of these more monetizable categories potentially too?
I think it's so interesting, and it does seem like that's the direction he's going in. I do think they're going to have to focus more on building up customer service and press relations. I saw somebody tweet, what happens when this becomes a super app and you are having a problem with your balance in your X account? You don't want to get a series of poop emojis back. Not going to be very funny then.
Yeah. And there's a lot of lessons to be learned from other US-based social media companies, aka Facebook. They tried to go really heavily into payments, right, with their Messenger app. There was a whole initiative around that. And I think they're trying to get into e-commerce. For Instagram, I think part of the trick here, and this is both a challenge and opportunity, is when someone thinks social media company in the US, they're like, hey, that's where I hang out with my friends. Am I going to take it seriously for other verticals? For some reason, other companies in other geos have been able to cross sectors. So whether that's Kakao, for example, that was Kakao Talk. It's this WhatsApp-like player in South Korea. They also have banking, they have payments, they have e-commerce as well. They've been able to create that infrastructure. So part of it is credibility. I think that's how other companies and other geos have been able to cross the chasm into other subsectors. And so it'll be interesting to see, to your point, if I'm going to get this emoji back, am I also going to trust them with thousands of dollars for a transfer or a payment or to be relying on them for returns and things like that? That I think is part of the psychology here that they have to figure out.
one thing that I also talked to Brian about and as a theme at Forerunner is the evolution of entrepreneurship and everyone becoming an entrepreneur. And I am interested in the ways that AI could potentially empower more people to do this. How are you thinking about how AI impacts some of the sectors that you're looking at?
One of the things we're really excited about with AI is it's yet another lever that is going to increase the rate of innovation and make entrepreneurship more successful. Mm-hmm. If you think back in history about the big levers that drove the growth of the startup ecosystem over the last few years, the launch of the App Store and the Android Store, right? It made it possible for any entrepreneur to launch in like 150 or 200 countries with full payment in a single app ecosystem and not have to figure out how to do distribution deals in all those places. The rise of cloud computing made it possible for anyone with a credit card to get globally scalable infrastructure that is available at the click of a button without going and hiring a back-end engineering team. The rise of Facebook and Google's ad systems made it possible to target customers in any geography by demographic or psychographic or particular demand characteristics. Each of those lowered the barrier to entry to entrepreneurship and made it easier for somebody with an idea to start a company and to get started testing a particular product. AI is going to be very, very similar in the impact on entrepreneurship. A single engineer can now do the work of 5 to 10 engineers. Somebody who doesn't know how to code can actually get that initial product going by leveraging AI to launch that product. Ultimately, those businesses will still need to be built with organizations that can scale, but it really reduces even further the barrier to getting that initial product going. And we think that if you look over the midterm, take away the funding challenges that I think exist in the market right now, we think those are temporary to a degree. But if you look over the midterm or long term, it should really lead to an explosion in the entrepreneurial ecosystem. And that's something that we're excited to dig into and meet all those entrepreneurs.
Is there a way that you're trying to capitalize on that trend more specifically right now versus, say, 2 years ago?
I was on a panel that talked about AI recently. And after the really smart people in the room talked about chip design and processing and all that stuff, of which half of it flew right over my head. It was like, look, from a consumer perspective, I think we have a basic three-prong approach, and a lot of Chihua talked about. And the first is our companies are going to be a lot more efficient. So there should be accretion to the bottom line by doing a lot of operations that were really manual in a more automated way. So they're going to save money, right? The second one is companies are going to be a lot more creative. So companies that are fintech or edtech, health tech, they're not AI companies, but all of these will be more creative from a generative perspective with new ideas and being able to expand their offerings from a consumer perspective. That's so, so powerful, right? And then finally, we're just starting to see really digitally AI companies that have true consumer applications. I think that's the area of focus for us now. And just making sure we're not too early. We don't want to be too late. You don't want to be the first ones in the pool that might lose a lot of capital because things are going to develop so quickly from here. But the first two, saving money, being more creative, and then truly digitally AI companies that are going to have their own infrastructure, that are going to be able to build applications that just weren't even imagined before. I think that we're just in the first couple pitches of the first inning around that, but we're really paying close attention.
Guys, I could keep you forever, but I'm sure you have other things to do. I did want to just ask a couple of other quick questions. In terms of customer acquisition, that's seemingly changed so much in the last 5 to 10 years. You did at some point invest in D2C companies. Maybe you still occasionally do, but what are some of the most effective customer acquisition strategies now, if that's not too broad-based a question?
Yeah, it's funny you should ask, because this was the question that was most asked by our portfolio in 2021 and 2022. So we ended up running a masterclass series called Hacking CAC, where the companies in the portfolio that were the best at SEO or referral marketing or using their data teams to publish and drive organic traffic ended up presenting those strategies to the portfolio, actually wrote up best practices that a lot of the companies could adopt. So we think really owning organic distribution is critical for any healthy company, because there isn't a whole lot of growth capital available just to pump into Google and Facebook, which is how most of the companies scaled from 2018 to 2021. So our companies are looking at how to develop content that enables them to attract a proprietary audience that's interested in their services or their category. They're figuring out how to do referral marketing at the SKU level. So you can identify a SKU that a particular group really likes, and then those customers end up sharing with their friends and have been able to grow really, really quickly. Some have built internal data teams that do programmatic publishing of content by using different types of internal and external data that they know can attract the right customers. So efficiency there is really going to matter a lot as well, because the underlying profitability of these businesses is driven in large part by how efficiently they're able to acquire those customers.
In terms of the seven areas that you're focused on, I'm just wondering, again, for founders, and just because I'm curious, if there's any area that you're maybe leaning into a little bit more than in previous years, and if so, why? I mean, healthcare, for example, seems so interesting. I keep hearing about how AI is just going to completely transform so many different sectors of healthcare. Fintech is interesting, seems oversaturated from my perch, but I have no idea. I know it's going through a little bit of a ebb right now. What's particularly ripe for more investment?
We take a really bottoms-up approach to it. So we are constantly tracking where consumers are going and where the puck is hopefully going as well. Fintech continues to be a really strong thesis for us, especially globally. It's maybe a little bit more saturated in some of the more mature markets, but in markets that are really bringing hundreds of millions of people online for the first time, that is one of the most attractive areas for us to get behind. To your point around health tech, we've invested heavily in health tech since the beginning. One of our Fund One companies had an AI assisted chatbot to help patients at the end of the day, which is called Pager, based out of New York. And that's really continued to accelerate and grow. And all the AI innovations continue to help that company and the tailwinds around it. So these are big, big industries that need continued adoption that are really hard problems to crack, right? These are not just fluffy products that are just being popped up here and there. This requires a lot of thought by fintech and health tech entrepreneurs to figure out innovative solutions. And those are really the ones that become utilities, not luxuries, over time. That's why we're so focused on platforms that provide a utility. If you think about utilities for us today, whether it's water, electricity, power, gas, these are things we can't imagine our lives without. Same thing with our core companies within financial services, within healthcare. And now we're starting to see beyond that, education, how you get your education, how you consume it, how you elevate over time. That becomes really, really interesting. And the power of consumer internet and digitally powered companies across the world to help democratize education and to allow people to really be their best versions, that's really accelerating right now. So whether that's companies like Study Smarter out of Germany, we recently sold a company called Photomath to Google as well, empowering millions of people around math education and tutoring and best practices. So that continues to be a really important vector for us. I think food and grocery and delivery, e-commerce in general, because of our backgrounds with companies like Coupang, with companies like we've been really steeped in this for a really long time and have really relevant experiences across that. So these are just big, big categories that we take on, and we're looking for not the easy solutions, but companies and entrepreneurs that are really pursuing hard solutions to hard problems that are branded under consumer tech. And we love to think about them as consumer utilities at the end of the day. So each of these categories are big. We don't play favorites necessarily, but we go to where the puck is going in terms of consumer adoption. And when we look at it from a global perspective, these are big, big industries that are continuing to be disrupted by these consumer tech entrepreneurs. And we're pretty pumped about it.
I haven't heard anybody mention crypto, Web2, decentralization. Is that something that you're thinking about at all?
Crypto for us is something we've stayed close to because it was a really big consumer adoption story. It's not an area of focus for us per se, but because we have a bottoms-up perspective, we're constantly looking for utilities. And I think what was interesting was 3-4 years ago, there was a lot of chatter about everything would go to the blockchain, and we were waiting and seeing if that would happen and really utilities being developed. And I think we're always open-minded. It just hasn't been an area of critical focus for us today.
And guys, before I let you go, you just mentioned Photomath. Congratulations. Can you talk a little bit about your returns, what your cash on cash returns are? I know you've got a hugely valuable portfolio that you're sitting on right now.
What we can talk to is what we target and our goals and ambitions. And I think this has played out for us is to be truly a top decile firm. And so that undulates based on different time periods and market conditions that we're in. We started the firm in 2014. If you look at some of our earlier funds, whether they had TOS in there, which was, I think, valued recently at close to $7 billion, Zendit in there, I think it crossed the $3 billion mark. We, which was multi-billion dollar in size as well. Musical.ly, which we exited. We've continued this global trend and we tripled down in consumer tech. And again, our goal is to truly be best in class, top decile. That is our benchmark and what we pursue. Not that it's all about that by any means, but we are in a service industry. We are here to serve at the pleasure of our LPs and our entrepreneurs. And we feel really good when we can provide lots of returns back to our limited partners that then put those to good use as well.
So no answer, but it's also a young portfolio, essentially. That's what I'm hearing.
That's a great way to put it.
Guys, thank you so much. I wish that we had more time. Congratulations on your momentum. And I'd love to stay in touch.
Thank you so much, Connie. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you both so much.
That's it. Thanks so much for listening and have a great weekend. We'll see you back here next week.